Okay, welcome back. Hour number two. We're going over to Tokyo this hour to talk to Dr. Richard Wilcox, PhD, who lives there, has a Japanese wife, a family, and has been to Fukushima. Been there with Yoichi Shimazu, and he has much to say about the situation over there, which continues to deteriorate physically, figuratively, in every way. It is not getting better. It is only getting worse. Arne Gundersen has a new statement out in the last couple of days. He says now that the waters off the West Coast are beginning to show more radioactivity in them. Now, keep in mind, even if the level of radiation in the Pacific, the polluted, maybe dead Pacific, when it reaches the West Coast, if the levels, if the measurements are 4 becquerels per cubic liter of water, something rather smallish, well, that's okay. That's to be expected. It will not be the same up and down the coast from Vancouver to Baja. It will vary. And what's more important than that, every time a wave breaks upon the shore, it will simply accumulate the amount of radiation in the sand and the beach. And remember the fog, remember the aerosolized microdroplets. Not all radioactive nuclides are going to be light enough to be carried around in microdroplets, but you want to take your chances? Good luck. We'll have to do this ourselves, as I've said many times. The feds are clearly not saying a word about it. Why? Because it is a gigantic problem. They know what's coming. They're measuring the air at multiple different elevations. They're measuring the water at multiple depths. They know exactly what's coming, when, where, and how. The government is not stupid. They have the best professionals. And when you look at the words of Dr. Kai Vetter, you see Berkeley Department of Nuclear Engineering, who has somehow found himself in the position of being the sole arbiter of whatever the results will be of Kelp Watch 2014, the testing of kelp, which will take a year to do, 3 different samplings over a year. One man already pronounced the results of the test. He said, there won't be anything to worry about. Nothing that'll harm your health. So he kind of tipped his hand. This is a con job, and he was put in charge of it because UC Berkeley and all the major universities get government grants. So that was the end of that. Berkeley was putting out very good reports for about a year and a half, and then about a year and a half ago, those reports stopped. Berkeley was measuring the radiation, increasing radiation in the topsoil, in the groundwater, in plants, in trees, in animals. They were doing a marvelous job, and then somebody told them to shut up, and they did. Rich, how are you? Welcome back. Thanks for being here tonight.
Hi, very good. Thank you very much. Happy April Fool's Day.
Yeah, for sure. And, the joke's on us.
It's the joke's on us. Yeah, what you were just remarking there, the science follows the funding. And so that's the way universities work, and correct scientific findings. And that's what I've been finding out, too, in Japan, kind of looking at the way the government measures radiation and how accurate or not accurate it is. But, yeah, thank you.
Absolutely. At the top of my Fukushima update section is a new video with Arne Gundersen, and Arne is really been a tremendous asset to those of us who are trying to present reality to the people. Although at times he has, I've felt, and others have felt, underplayed things for reasons that he only will speak about to his friends, his wife, maybe he won't even tell, I don't know, but he does underplay things from time to time. But generally speaking, he's done a very good job.
He's an educator, and he's explained complicated, you know, nuclear engineering topics to the layperson, which is invaluable, and we are indebted to him immensely.
Yeah. Not easy to do either, and he's made it approachable, he's made it interesting, and I think time, of course, will judge Arne to be a true hero for truth, and that's what we need. He did an interview with Al Jazeera, which is, I think, very telling, and I think you'll enjoy seeing that. It is up at the top story location in the Fukushima box of stories at the very top of headlines that ran. So there you go.
I think you said, I haven't watched it yet, but he said 1 million gallons of contaminated water so far into the ocean from Fukushima. 1 million gallons. I mean,
no, it's more than that.
It's
way more than that. It's in the hundreds of millions, and it's talking about the totality of 1,000 days worth of discharge, and that's a lot of water. Now, remember, TEPCO was saying for the longest time that about 300 cubic liters of water, no, metric tons, I beg your pardon, 300 metric tons of radioactive water a day was being dumped into the Pacific Ocean. And then about 6 months ago, they upped it to 400. Well, Yochi and I'm probably speaking for you as well, feel that they don't know what the hell's going in the ocean. It could be 1,000 metric tons a day, easily. And no one is talking. No one knows.
Well, so, I read that the plant is built over a river. I mean, an underground river.
It is.
It's not only an aquifer.
No, it's an aquifer.
I mean, what kind of a crazy place to build a nuclear power plant?
They don't care.
So there's so much water flowing there.
Yeah, it's an aquifer, but it's a mega aquifer. It comes down from the mountains, and it's actually worse than putting it on an earthquake fault, because if something did happen, which has, you've got this water that will forever be carrying radioactivity because it becomes irradiated as it passes through the melted cores.
That's right.
I mean, this is beyond belief. I mean, it really is. It's something that you just couldn't make up.
Yeah. Well, and I just go back to the conservative, very, very conservative estimate from one of the government, Japanese government scientists, that 160 billion becquerels per day is going into the ocean, which, I don't know, just think about the limit is 100 becquerels per kilogram in any food. So 160 billion, that's quite a lot, and that's probably very conservative.
Yeah.
You know, it's probably a lot more than that. So
say that again.
Every day, that's constant. Right?
What is the becquerel max that is supposedly allowed in food?
100 becquerels per kilogram in Japan, and in America, I think it's 1,500. So, but
a kilogram
is a very abstract way to look at it. But
it's a weird way to look at it. That's 2.2 pounds. So if you ate a 16-ounce steak, 16-ounce steak, a hamburger, a 1-pounder, you're going to get half of that amount. Here are the quotes from Arnie. Let me just read these real quickly. And you can actually see the video if you want. But he says that, got about a minute in, they're not really measuring the worst of the radiation. All right, now that, this is me speaking, that in and of itself is a very, very important statement, and it's obvious, and it's true. It's just, it's the way Arnie talks, and this has been the case from the beginning, and I'll start again. He said, they're not really measuring the worst of the radiation. What we're finding are very, very small microscopic particles that are lodging in people's lungs. The Japanese government is not taking that exposure into effect. The health consequences within 20 kilometers and 30 kilometers of Fukushima are really significant and will be for decades. They are really forcing them, meaning the people, to move in, to go home, because they're taking away the money that they have been receiving to live remotely away from the site in temporary housing. So the Japanese government has taken away the money that was used to house these evacuees in remote locations, and they're sending them home in the hot zone, in the exclusion zone, in an area that no people should live.
The death zone.
The death zone, and Arnie continues to say, the only way these people, can continue to be on a stipend is to come back into the radiation. So it's damned if you do, damned if you don't, and death in either case. I mean, you've got particles in your lungs, you're going to get lung cancer. And these poor people, so the government says, we'll give you a stipend, some money, a third of what they were spending for housing for them in a safe location, if they go home. So they're sending these people back to die. And the world is looking the other way. And these people are dutifully doing it. What's with that culture?
Yeah. Well, that's right. Arnie raises the very crucial point, and it's been coming out now in the news. The Mainichi reported on the manipulation of the radiation data to downplay, you know, that, oh, it's not that radioactive, you can go home now. To answer your question, what's with the culture, that goes back to James Clavell's book, what was the name of his famous book, Shogun. And it's just amazing, the fatalism that's kind of built into the culture. And that's a really beautiful piece of work by Clavell. But and he presents it in a very artistic way, but it's also very brutal, this fatalism. And of course, in the modern world, things have changed a lot, but there's still, at a deep metaphysical level, this submission to authority and fatalistic acceptance. But, you know, there's another side to this story, Jeff, and I'll tell you about that, because I visited up there, and we'll talk about that, some other aspects of the
okay, hold on a second.
Issue.
Let's go right through the break here. I want to hear this. Go on, please.
Oh, okay. So, recently, I was fortunate enough to, with one of my ex-students who works for a volunteer group, she invited me and a number of other volunteers to go up to visit Nihon Matsu, which is one of the cities or a smaller city up near Fukushima Daiichi, outside the evacuation zone. And you can look it up on Wikipedia, and it's about 50 kilometers outside there. Well, we arrived at the evacuation temporary housing facility, which the one we visited was actually in a really beautiful location up where there used to be a baseball field. And so it was very flat bluff, a perfect place to build a facility for 500 people, temporary housing. And with a view of the mountain range in the distance, it was still snow-covered and just kind of amazing. And we got there, and immediately I noticed at the main office there was a dosimeter, one of these you've seen on some of the YouTube videos, or some of the, probably people following this issue have seen, you know, on ENE News and so on, those big dome-shaped dosimeters that the government installed. Well, there was one of those, and immediately I was curious, what's the dose level? And I went up and I have my own dosimeter, and it was very low. It was 0.13, and it wavered up and down a little bit. So that's kind of a normal level, and I thought, wow. So I turned on my dosimeter, and I got a similar reading. So I knew then that my dosimeter and the official government dosimeter were in the same ballpark. Well, then we met with the children, and one of the reasons the volunteer group goes up there is because they're trying to cheer up the kids. There's a few children living there. Most of the people living in these facilities are old folks, and they're from evacuation zone area, such as Namie Town, which got really nailed with radiation. And a lot of the other kind of people don't qualify for this kind of cheap housing, or free housing, really, or they've found other means. And so, but there are a few children there, and they're in good spirits and everything. And it was a good, we did an Easter egg hunt. And so the way that the Japanese, a lot of these volunteers are like college students and young adults, and they had the right idea too. It was a mission of goodwill, and it was very nice. But so we did a bit of the volunteering, and then I walked around the compound, and I was shocked that the radiation level was 2 millisieverts, ranging wildly from, you know, on up from the low level to up to over 2 millisieverts. And I was just shocked by that. And I shouldn't have been, but I mean, I was a little bit surprised because to witness it firsthand. But if we go back and think about the radiation maps that were put out by the government and by the professor from Gunma University, Hayakawa professor, Professor Hayakawa. This is right after the accident. Of course, people that know those maps know that the radiation ebbed and flowed and was very intense in the northwestern area from the plant. And so that's the region we were in. And so it's very common knowledge among the people around there that it is about 2 millisieverts. Two microsieverts. That's a big difference. 2 microsieverts, which adds up to 17 millisieverts per year.
Okay, microsieverts an hour?
Two microsieverts an hour.
Okay.
Adds up to approximately 17 millisieverts a year, which is just under the new safe limit that the government, you know, after the accident, they lifted it from 1 millisievert per year.
They lifted it way high. And then the United States came along and lifted it even higher, these so-called safe exposure levels. It's black humor at its worst or best, however you want to look at it.
Worst on April Fool's Day.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're pushing the edge, the limit of this. And, you know, it's a 100 millisievert lifetime. You know, all this science about radiation is so flawed and everything. All of these assumptions and inherent biases in these radiation models, and that's been known for decades, even by the U.S. establishment scientists who, decades ago, at the beginning of the atmospheric nuclear test, said, you know, there's no safe dose of radiation, and et cetera, et cetera. So anyway, the main point from my story here is that to visit that refugee camp and talk to the folks there, and I talked to the head of we interviewed the head of the camp of the facility, I guess it's called, very nice guy, and he said, oh yeah, just matter-of-factly, you know, it's 2 microsieverts pretty much all around this. Nihonmatsu is a large city of tens of thousands of people, and so unless they've decontaminated some area, you know, this is another thing. They never decontaminated the facility, the temporary housing facility, because it's just that temporary. And in about 2 years, they're going to move all these people to another facility. And, or, like you said, they're going to move them back into their own homes, back in where they came from, if they can do that.
Well, I think they're trying to do that. They were also, remember, offering brand new homes in the exclusion zone or very close to it for any pregnant women who wanted a new home, free home if you move back and you're pregnant. Now, this government is diabolically, this government is diabolically evil. It's inhuman.
It's true. There's, yep.
Yeah, free home if you're pregnant and you want to move, you got one.
I'll have to.
You can look it up.
You know, I'm writing
the story,
so I'll have to put that in there. This never ends. But you know, just to come face to face with this completely. Yeah, I mean, the scientific fraud to claim that if you go to the government website, the MEXT, it's the a lot of people know what I'm referring to here. It's called the Nuclear Regulation Authority. Is the Japanese government data on radiation throughout Japan, and it looks very official and everything.
Right.
There's a page called Monitoring Information of Environmental Radioactivity Level, and not sure about their English grammar there, but if you go to the pages, recent pages measuring radiation in Nihonmatsu and that area of Fukushima, they just give these really low readings, you know, like 0.2 or something, 0.3, sometimes 0.5, which is pretty high, but 0.2 is tolerable anyway. But, you know, and I was there, and that's not the way it is in 90% of the region. It's that area was just blasted with radiation from those triple meltdowns, and it's embedded in the soil, and I assume there's even fresh radiation coming from the plant to that area as well, but only unless they've decontaminated. We went to a convenience store, and I put the dosimeter down on the pavement, and it was fairly low. It was 0.25 or something. Obviously, they decontaminated that parking lot, and yet they haven't decontaminated the place where 500 people are living because it's considered temporary, and children are running around there. They're riding their skateboards. I was just shocked that they hadn't decontaminated the facility. Maybe outside they can't do much, but at least the streets where people are living, they should. And I met a group of workers that are decontamination workers, and they're construction workers. They're from Kyoto, and they're very friendly. And the guy told me, oh, yeah, it's common knowledge, 2 millisieverts. We're talking about this region. If you were to go to another area, either north or south, it might change a little bit. But that's a lot of radiation, especially for children, especially if you're a pregnant woman. That's the worst of all. But that is intolerable. That's an intolerable amount of radiation for anybody to normally endure. And the lifetime dose for nuclear workers is 100 millisieverts. That's a lifetime limit, right? And so if you're a nuclear worker, you can't pass 100 millisieverts. Well, they'll hit that in 5 years, you know. How do they figure this out? It's insane. Anyway, that's the story. It's so sad to see the children playing outside and rolling around on the ground where it's contaminated, and they're obviously ingesting the radiation. These people are just kind of tossed away. The man I met who was in charge of this facility said the people that are living there used to live almost off the land. They're farmers, they're rural people, they're humble people, but they're very wise people. And they now that they've lost their homes, they're forced to be dependent on money to survive. And so that's a terrible situation for them. Before, they could live off the land, and now they're trapped in the money economy. And so they're very, with the compensation they received from TEPCO is very limited. And so they're all really, really in dire straits economically and, of course, health-wise. So those are some of the high points of this, some of the important points of this topic and that Arnie has been addressing, and I'm glad to see him addressing them. So, yeah, it's terrible.
Okay, stand by. We'll be right back with Richard Wilcox in just a couple minutes. Okay, welcome back. Talking to Dr. Rich Wilcox, PhD, who is in Tokyo, and absorbing, as they say, absorbing things that humans shouldn't absorb. It is accumulative. That's the big problem. We're going to face that over here. It is being faced by people who are literally dying right now in Japan. It is a true genocide sanctioned by the government to entice these people, force them, really, to go back home. When they shouldn't go anywhere near the place because they don't want to continue to pay for off-site, distant, remote, safe, temporary housing for them anymore. So let's just send them back home and give them a stipend, which will be 20% of what they were having to spend on the temporary homes.
Give them a free pass to Disneyland.
That's right. That too. That's right.
Sorry to interrupt, Jeff, but just wanted to get out. You know, where these folks are from, sorry to yammer on so much, but it's my chance on the radio. But these folks, they're from Namie Town. Back there, it's 6 to 7 microsieverts per hour and as high as 35 microsieverts per hour. So that's way over the 20 millisievert yearly limit, and how are they going to send those folks back there? And yet still some of the old people go back to clean their houses. They actually do go back to visit and make sure that their houses are in good order. But, I mean, how are they ever going to actually go back there? I mean, it's just, it's so sad and tragic. And, right, the government's irresponsibility is beyond words. So,
I don't know if we can, I really don't know if we can use the word irresponsible. This is not irresponsible. This is planned genocide. It's nothing less. They know what's going on. It's not carelessness. Here's Arne Gundersen again. He says, you run the risk of destroying... He's talking about the policy of sending these people back into a very heavily radioactive area.
That's right.
He said, you run the risk of destroying the fabric of a country. It happened at Chernobyl, and it's happening right now in Japan. The nuclear plant on the Japanese side of the Pacific is bleeding radiation into the Pacific every day. About 400 tons of radioactive water every day for over 1,000 days now. That's a total of 105,668,000 gallons of deadly water have been pouring into the Pacific. We are beginning to see low levels of radiation in the water. He means along the West Coast. Until our government, whether it's states or national government, tell me what's in the fish, I remain very concerned about eating the fish that are coming from the Pacific. Now, this is where I differ with Arne. He shouldn't equivocate. He should say, until we know, you should not eat anything from the Pacific Ocean. Until we are guaranteed those fish are safe, don't eat any fish. He further should have said, the government of the United States has done nothing to inform the public, is making available no test results on a routine or even an infrequent basis to the American public. The government of the United States is beyond negligent, criminally so, and should be held accountable. Now, that's what he should say, in my view.
Yeah. Right. Well, he's probably under pressure to...
Well, I'm sure he is. I'm sure.
I know. It's... But it just, like, I misspoke and said irresponsible. I mean, that's just, I misspoke. But, right, the words don't come diabolically evil. You used that phrase. That's what I agree with. And it is calculated, which this experience I had of, you know, firsthand seeing this dosimeter up there giving this false, it was giving an accurate reading. I didn't explain that. The reason it was so low is because, and this is what the camp leader told me, they had decontaminated only around that installation. And so that's why when you walked away, the radiation went wild. But around there, it was giving an accurate reading, as my dosimeter did as well. Now, this raises this question, what about all of these at the Japan government website with all of these readings? You know, they measure the radiation in the water and in the air, the fallout, radiation levels in different all of the different prefectures of the country. And so, for example, I just checked it, and it's, according to their calculation, 1 meter above the ground in Tokyo, it's 0.061 microsieverts, which is really low. But I measured it, and it was 0.13, you know. And so why the difference? And you could say, well, your machine doesn't work right, or there's a different, it's measuring something differently. But, you know, this, it really does raise the question of, can we trust any of this data at that website? And, I mean, it's a really big question mark. Where are the independent journalists, investigative journalists, to dig into that story from the Japan Times or wherever? I'd like to know more about this, but... From what I can tell, I'm very questionable about, I feel very hesitant to believe their data anymore. There's radiation in the drinking water in many prefectures in Japan, including Tokyo, and they say it's a very small amount, but
oh, well, listen,
how can we believe that's true or not?
Well, as if any...
What's your opinion, Jeff? Go ahead.
Well, no amount of radiation is safe, first of all.
Right.
I don't care what they call it, small amount, low dose, doesn't matter. It's cumulative.
Yeah.
You drink that stuff, that's the worst thing you can do. It goes into your body, it takes up residence, and you're going to get cancer. sooner or later. Most people will. The drinking water of Japan is in a slow, downward, irrevocable curve toward being destroyed. It's going to be destroyed because the snow melt is radioactive. It's slowly working its way down into the reservoirs. We know what's been found in the mud at the bottom of rivers and reservoirs. This is all, it's all predicated on a lie. Don't look, don't tell. Let's talk about the 2020 Olympics. Don't worry about a thing. Be happy. What's that smoke coming out of that tall smokestack in downtown Tokyo or some suburb? Don't worry, that's just our municipal incinerator burning up the municipal waste. No, it's not. It's burning up hundreds of millions of tons, or however many it was, of the radioactive wastes and debris that were collected after the earthquake and tsunami. Every major urban area is burning it, putting it right up into the air.
There's still a lot of that piled up around, too.
Yeah, of course. And the ash is terrible. And what do they do with that? They've been dumping a lot of it in Tokyo Bay. Perfect for the Olympics, huh?
Yeah.
All right, I'll be right back in just a couple minutes. Hold on. Okay, last week there was a fatality at Fukushima Daiichi at the plant. Now, I say that almost tongue-in-cheek because there have been hundreds of fatalities. This one just happened to be something that occurred in broad daylight, and they couldn't cover it up. It was a fellow went into a hole to check on a building foundation, on a piece of the concrete above him, fell on him and killed him. So when you have an admitted 600-plus Fukushima workers having disappeared, where did they all go? Did they all just go home? Did they go away to die? Did they vaporize? Where did they go? Lots of dead people, hundreds in 3 years. And thousands more coming. So, yeah, they closed the plant for a day. Look, the buildings are subsiding. I don't know where their ice wall is right now, but the more water from that underground river, stream, aquifer, that is stopped from going into the Pacific Ocean, the more water backs up in the Fukushima Daiichi plant. And the buildings begin to settle into the muck, which they're already doing. 31 inches on one side of reactor building 4 is already the depth that that side has sunk into the wet muck, the oatmeal. It's turning into oatmeal, the whole damn thing. And no one has been able to get into buildings 1, 2, or 3 yet, okay? They can't send robots in there. The radiation levels are climbing. They're getting worse. The robot's microcircuitry and little computer, they burn up. So this is a problem with no solution. There's no technology out there that can do anything about this. Nothing.
In the reactor buildings, the radiation is in the thousands of millisieverts, is it not? I mean, it's
It's something like reactor building number 3 has several sieverts in it. I can't remember what it is. You got a microsievert, 1,000 microsieverts is a millisievert, 1,000 millisieverts is a sievert. There are measurements and sieverts in these buildings, which is fatal in 20 minutes. All right, you're dead. You're just dead.
Right.
You're not sick,
so
you're dead.
So various places in the
compound.
Compound itself, I mean, it varies, and there's places that are less radioactive, but there's so many hot spots, they can't hang around there long. And as you said, where are the workers? After they're done, I mean, they're unhealthy. They go home and...
Well, they're given their final check and told to get the hell out. That's the Yakuza Unemployment Agency.
Is
probably fairly... well, it was supposedly busy, but they say they're running out of people. Some homeless people are being pressed into service there now.
Yeah, it's an ongoing... nightmare for...
It's a disgrace.
If you get in trouble with the Yakuza, they give you two choices. We can either kill you or you can go work in Daiichi and die that way. Yeah, there's even a story that this worker death, the guy that was crushed by the concrete, it could have been prevented. And they just kind of ignored it. And they didn't get him to the hospital on time. Very slow service to take care of his... to bring the ambulance out there. So it's just it's
oh,
just
really? I didn't hear.
Appalling. Well, that's it. Simply Info, which is an excellent website. We owe them a debt of gratitude, Simply Info. TEPCO released a report at the plant. It showed the worker had been working in a small cave-like area, jackhammering the concrete overhead. And
wait a minute. Why would someone jackhammer the concrete over their own head? Or was someone else doing
tricky.
That?
There's even a picture of it. Yeah, it's. I think they're bad management. You know.
You might say that.
Let's see. What was the reason that he could have been? I think right there is a good reason. I mean, they're not doing good construction, making good construction decisions. But it's something to do with faulty. They weren't taking proper safety precautions. Anyway, I mean, that's just typical at that place. So, there's one other thing I did want to mention. That Chris Busby, I asked him, Chris Busby, he's famous radiation expert and a real hero, along with people like Arne Gunderson and Helen Caldicott. He's one of those incredible campaigners. But I did ask him about how is it the government fudges the data. And can I just read a few sentences of what he
told please. Me? Yeah.
Because it sounds technical, and we won't spend a lot of time on this, but it's important because not only, as you say, is the U.S. government just ignoring the radiation in the ocean, just say, oh, no, there's no problem, go out and swim and eat the fish. But even when governments do measure it, they have tricks to, and so here's what he said. The usual trick is this. The government dosimeters are always ones that give the results as counts per minute, CPM, not as microsieverts or microgray per hour. So apparently the machine converts the counts to sieverts, and when it does this, it depends how it measures the different types of radiation, and which is called calibration. So I don't quite completely understand this, except that your dosimeter can be calibrated to measure, for example, cesium-137, or it could perhaps be calibrated to kind of ignore that and look for something else. But it is odd that, you know, my dosimeter measures differently than theirs does, and Tokyo anyways.
Who do we trust? You got a dosimeter that works properly.
I do.
Well, there shouldn't be a problem then.
Yeah. So they're fudging the data, or their machines are not are intentionally underestimating the amount of radiation. That's the point, I think, that Chris Busby is indicating. And of course, they also they clean around. They do decontamination around the dosimeters, and they put them up way up high on poles so that if the contamination is on the ground, then it's not going to reach the dosimeter. So it's just these tricks that they're up to are just, you know, something else. But I don't know. So we can't really trust the government readings, I don't think.
When's the last time you were in the area? How long ago now?
Fukushima?
Yeah.
Yeah. That was last weekend, last Saturday. We drove to Nihonmatsu.
It's just been 4 days. Okay.
Yes. And we drove up. It's a five-hour drive, long day, but very interesting. And just, as they say, the people, you know, inside the evacuation zone, it's just, I just can't believe there's another story about the people that have moved back to another town.
Uh-huh.
And I just, and you read in the mainstream news, they're saying, well, it's the radiation's very low. Well, those are fake readings, you know. That's not the real level. They're saying it's, you know, just some minor amount of radiation. Not true. So the media is just passing this disinformation along, the mainstream media, and even naive people may be in the alternative media, but because it is a little complicated. But
right.
So those folks are living in really high radiation zone every day. And the man I met, he told me the people grow vegetables in the radioactive soils and they eat those vegetables. So they're...
Oh, I know. Well, they're also
eating a ton of this stuff.
Yeah, they're feeding them to children. In 3 to 4 or 5 years, they're going to be cancers, abdominal cancers of all kinds. It's just going to be awful. You get exposed to radioactivity externally, you can wash it off. But when you inhale it or you eat it, it just doesn't go away. You got it. So I don't know.
Vegetables are grown in the soil, it'll be inside the vegetables, right? So
of course. It's in the soil, it's in the vegetables, it's in the rain that can come down on the leafy vegetables. What are the people over there saying about the fact that they have very likely killed the largest ocean on the planet, and that polluted ocean water is about to hit the entire west coast of North America? What are they saying about that over there?
Nothing. I mean, it's just, I hate to be the bearer of bad news.
No accountability.
It's not my fault. Well, I'm a little to blame, like we all are, but... you know, the level of ignorance is astonishing, and the level of denial. And even with foreign friends I know, or teachers and folks that I sometimes work with and so on, it's just a topic that people don't want to hear about, and just an enormous level of ignorance. And there is no feeling. Japanese are very proud people, and they would strongly resent the idea.
Proud of destroying the Pacific Ocean?
Yeah. Well, they're not proud of it, but they're so proud that they think they're not responsible for that, and they're not going to take responsibility for the government.
What was it, an act of God? I don't think so.
Yeah, the government and the media have brainwashed people to ignore the issue, and, you know, so that's just, it's just really unbelievable. When I raise this issue with students, they do... There's a lot of concern, but you can only take it so far. But, I mean, the level of responsibility is enormous, and the level of acknowledgement is minuscule. So that's a huge problem. Even in the news, you know, the more critical newspapers, they don't really talk about they just cite these experts to say, well, the radiation, not that much, don't worry about it. Go back to sleep and things like that, but
right.
You know, they say, well, the tuna has a little bit of radiation, but it won't hurt you and whatnot. But so there's just a huge amount of denial about that issue.
All right, we'll see what happens. Thanks a lot, Richard, for all you do and the risks you've taken and the stand you've taken, and it's greatly appreciated. You be safe.
We didn't have time to play W.C. Fields.
Oh. Were we going to?
It's April Fool's Day, so...
Oh, jeez. Which next one were time. We going to play?
Well, last time you played how about next time Stan Laurel and Oliver Hardy? We'll go for that one.
You got it. We'll do it. Okay. Thanks,
Richard. Thank you very much.
Okay. Good night.
Bye-bye.
Okay, Richard Wilcox, PhD, and we'll be right back with Hour 3 in just a few.